like to talk a bit more about impermanence, and so that the fourth grouping of tetrads, mindfulness of impermanence, dispassion, cessation, and relinquishment. So especially on impermanence, and then we'll touch on the other ones. So impermanence is taught in Buddhist teaching to be a characteristic of anything that we can experience through our senses. And so we know a lot about or we can look around and we can see evidence of impermanence in the world around us. We see the changes and forms and trees and buildings and neighborhoods, and we see changes in our bodies as we get older. So this is one level of seeing impermanence, and it's important. In order for this knowledge of impermanence to really have a liberating effect on us, so that we're not caught in trying to grasp onto things, we need to know about it more deeply than intellectually. And we need to know it directly within our inner experience. And so we've been talking about this today. We need to see it with our inner eye. So it's most transformative to know impermanence within our body and mind. So simply knowing the change in the breath that happens with each breath, you know, in every sitting, you know, how many changes do we discover in the breath? So, you know, in the first day of retreat, we spent a fair bit of time becoming familiar with the breath. So where we feel it, how we feel it, how it changes, what impacts on the breath, how the mind impacts on the breath, how other conditions, the temperature, the changes in our body impact on the breath. So in this contemplation, we were becoming familiar in the first part of the Anapanasati practice, just becoming familiar with the breath and feeling it and observing it. And now we're kind of intentionally noticing the impermanent nature of it. So in a way, it was implicit in what we were noticing, because if we're noticing all the different variations in the breath and the texture of the breath, we are actually noticing how it changes, but it's more explicit now in how we are meditating with the breath. So the understanding or seeing anicca or impermanence also opens us up to seeing or knowing the other characteristics of our experience. So in the Vipassana teaching, where we learn that, you know, the Buddha has a way of teaching in which he says, you know, well, look and see. This is what I'm telling you, you know, that I see. So now you look at your experience and you see if you find this to be true. And so he says, you know, nothing is permanent. Everything changes. And nothing, no thing that we can experience through sensory, you know, contact, no thing can actually be fulfilling because it is always changing. And what's more, we're always changing. So we can't find a kind of, you know, it's always unstable, it's always unreliable. One of the words I like, the word for this is dukkha. And it, you know, I've mentioned in previous talks that it has a whole range of meanings, you know, and one of the words I like is unreliable. You know, we can't always expect that something's going to make us feel good or find contentment with something. And so it's unstable, it's unreliable, it's unfulfilling. And then, you know, at the further extreme, it's painful, it's suffering. So dukkha has that meaning. And then the third characteristic that the Buddha says, you know, this is what I'm trying to point out to you, look and see, if you see this to be true, that nothing has a separate existence. Nothing exists independently. Everything exists interdependently. Everything has contingent existence. So we can see this in something you know, as simple as this sounding stick. So we might look at it with our kind of common sense, you know. You know, if I were to say, does this have a separate existence? You know, I'd say, yeah, it's a thing, right? It's a thing. You know, it's not, doesn't seem to be attached to anything else. When we look at this object with wisdom eyes, you know, we can see that it's made of wood. We can, you know, recognize that it grew from a tree. The wood grew from a tree, and and the tree requires certain conditions in which to grow. It requires sun and rain and soil, certain minerals in the soil that only can be created in the birth of stars. And we're scattered onto the earth in the kind of the whole expansion of the universe. And so we can see that the elements, the matter of which this sounding stick is made, you know, is really comes from, I mean, really is dependent, you could say, or interdependent or contingent upon the existence of the universe. And we could also look in terms of, you know, other factors. We could say, well, this stick has a certain size, a certain form. There are certain little ridges on it, which, you know, are kind of traditional. So it was made with tools, with some kind of lathe, which is a human invention. So it required human intelligence, communication. So somebody taught the person who made this how to make it, and so on. You know, somebody designed it at one point. It's got some kind of soft covering on one end to make it a little, to make the sound a little softer. So that's that's also designed very skillfully. And so human society, human communication, teaching, craftsmanship are all part of this as well. So history. I don't know where it's made. Maybe Thailand, something, place like that. So then we can ask, well, was the person who made this sounding stick, what were they paid to make it? Were they given a just wage? Was it enough to cover the actual time and effort and energy that was put into making it? What's the environmental footprint of transporting this from there to the little shop on Notre Dame Street where I bought it? So there's all, there's so many dimensions. I could probably go on if I, but there's a lot, in this stick. And I mean, if we look at it then with the eyes of wisdom, we say, well, yes, the sun, the moon, the stars, the earth, humanity, social justice, it's all here in this sounding stick. So, and how much more our bodies, our minds, exist contingently. The air we breathe, the water we drink, the food we eat, our ideas are formed by our education, our society, our upbringing. So anatta, that's the third characteristic of non-self. And so as we see impermanence, we see through the illusion of a permanent existence, a satisfying, that we can be satisfied in an enduring way by sensory experiences, and that sensory experiences include, experiences of the mind. The mind is is the sixth sense. And this illusion of a permanent self. So we see through that in the looking deeply into the impermanent nature of things. So a bit more about the illusion of separate self, a meditation. It's not that it's negative. It's not that it's negative that there is no separate self. It's just the way it is. It's the law of nature. So we look around us and we see that elements come together for a time and they're bound together by certain conditions. So we know from geology about tectonic plates. And we have traced back the configuration of the planet, that continents have moved and shifted. But we have this idea that somehow our world is stable. It's just that the rate of change and our capacity for perception, our capacity for perception is much shorter than the rate of change. The rate of change is much slower than our capacity for perception. So we don't see tectonic plates moving. And we can see a little bit glaciers moving. Actually, it's where we're seeing glaciers moving and glaciers melting. And we're seeing climate changing more rapidly than we have in a long time. So conditions come together to make a continent. Conditions come together to make a volcano. Conditions come together to make a cloud. Conditions come together to make a dog, a fish, or a human being. And then other forces act on these temporary manifestations to bring their separate existence, what appears to be a separate existence, to an end. But it's not more, when we see the froth on an ocean wave, we can see very clearly that the froth is part of the ocean wave. And when it comes in and it melts back, the bubbles go back into the ocean, we see, okay, this is the froth, the wave is not separate from the ocean. And so, but we don't see that so easily when it comes to people, and especially ourselves. So dukkha arises when we cling to a bit of froth. And so it's always disappointing. But when we can be with a wave coming in and being a wave, then it's just the unfolding of life. And when we know about our interdependent lives, we can live with a deeper appreciation of our connection to all of life. As I was mentioning on one of our communal walks, we breathe in oxygen and trees are breathing it out, and we breathe out CO2 and trees breathe it in. And so trees and people and all things are interdependent. And Thich Nhat Hanh talks about this as interbeing. It's a beautiful phrase that he coined, interbeing. So it's not just being, it's interbeing. All being is interbeing. So we can see that the truths of anicca, dukkha, anatta are all intertwined and are really facets of the truth of nature. Language is what separates things. Language is a wonderful gift that human beings have to see things and put words on them and understand them and understand the differences between things and understand, what this particular thing is and why it's maybe different from this particular thing. Language doesn't tell us that in this sounding stick there's a cloud. So, we don't think about it that way. That's, one of the reasons that poetry is so wonderful is that it kind of evokes these profound connections. Some poetry does, anyway. And so when we are understanding only, and when we're taking our experience in only at the level, only mediated through words and ideas, we are we're not living from that deeper place of interconnection and a kind of a life, a presence of life and openness, which includes everything. So perception, I want to talk for a moment about language and perception. We use language, right, so language is important. We use language to understand the Dharma. We use language to understand so much. You know, we can learn so much through language. And yet, we also have to, I think it's important to understand the limitations of language and how language can limit us. So through language, we create a belief system in a solid, permanent world, and we believe in the perceptions that we filter life through. One of the ways that it's helped me to understand how perceptions are limiting, and perception is a very big word. So perceptions are learned, you know, as from the very, you know, early moments, you know, as newborns, the understanding so far of the mind of a newborn is that really it's pretty undifferentiated, you know, that there's a swirl of sensation and forms, sounds, you know, what is my body, what is not my body. It's not very, you know, not very differentiated, right? And then eventually, you know, a form begins to be associated, maybe form, smell, sound begins to associate it with mommy, you know, when I'm hungry, you know, mommy comes and feeds me and I feel better. You know, so gradually, you know, babies understand what is mommy, what is daddy, what is, you know, what is different kinds of food, and, you know, all the different kinds of objects that are around, what kids have to learn that, you know, what comes out of their bodies, you know, is, you know, not a toy. So the food is not a toy, spit it out, all of these things. But it's all learning, right? It's all learning, it's all socialization, and it's all perception, right? So when we perceive a baby, you know, eating a banana and then spitting it out and playing with it, you know, we might see that differently than if we saw an adult do it, right? So it's perception. It's perception. And one perception would just be, that's a baby. And another perception would be, oh, that's wrong. Don't do that. Our perceptions are actually also limited by our capacity to receive certain within a certain range of light, within a certain range of sound, certain kinds of touch, certain kinds of tastes. So So one example that I like a lot is there's this cosmologist named Brian Swim, and he, you know, he talks, he's given a lot of kind of presentations on spirituality and cosmology and the environment, and you know, and one exercise that he did was, you know, imagine a field. So just imagine any field that, you know, you might be familiar with or that, you know, you can just conjure up in your imagination. And so that field for you has certain characteristics. You know, you see perhaps, you know, blades of grass, you see maybe trees, maybe there's movement of the wind. So that field is a certain field for you. You know, you have a sense of what a field is. An eagle is flying over the field. That's a different field for the eagle. That field is just alive with little critters running around. That eagle can see, you know, at least 100 times better than we can. And the movement, the subtlety of, you know, the diversity and variation of what that eagle can see is enormous, much more than for us. Imagine a pony going into that field. You know, that field is full of smells and tastes and textures that, you know, attract them in ways that we're not attracted. So the point is, there's no field. There's no field out there somewhere. There's a field that is created in the mind. There's a field that's created through our senses and what arises in consciousness and what we're capable of taking in. And so that's how perception works. And perceptions are conditioned as well. They're conditioned by our upbringing. They're conditioned by our education. They're conditioned by our the prejudices that we were taught as children, that some people are okay and some people are not okay, and some people you should be afraid of, and some people you can trust. So, you know, all of the different kinds of prejudice that's deeply rooted in our minds, you know, it's part of perception. And so we need to become aware of perceptions. And it's not that, you know, we're bad people because there are prejudices in our minds. They came from somewhere. It's just as if we want to become free, if we want to become open, if we want to become loving and inclusive, we need to become aware of what are the perceptions that form how we feel. What kind of feelings come up? You know, the pleasant, unpleasant, neutral feelings. So so perceptions are impermanent as well. Perceptions change moment by moment. It's the nature of seeing, it's the nature of hearing, it's the nature of our senses that our perceptions are, it's the nature of the mind, that it's not steady and stable. There's an inherent instability in how we sense, in how we think. It's not solid. So seeing how perceptions change is something that happens as our meditation deepens. That just, for example, moving into the body and just feeling, for example, you know, as the mind becomes more quiet, feeling a particular place in the body where maybe we feel pressure. And as we, if we keep our attention there, we'll notice that there's actually a lot of flux. It's not just one sensation, right? There's a lot of flux in that. There's pressure, there's perhaps tingling, we feel the pressure in different ways. So we begin to see this more clearly as the mind slows down and attention becomes more steady. So in this seeing impermanence, and in seeing impermanence, we also see the instability or unreliability of experience and the contingent nature of experience. We begin to see the patterns and the different formations in the body and the mind. And in deeply seeing into the nature of our experience, the impermanent nature of our experience, there is a transformation and a liberation that can happen, because when we see deeply, we see that we can't cling. There's nothing to cling to. There's nothing to cling to. When we're clinging to something, we're clinging to creation of the mind. And so the perception is not the object. The perception is how the mind takes in the object. We create in our minds with language, through our senses, and so on. We create something, and then we're clinging to that. And so it can't be clung to. It's constantly being reconstructed. The actual perception is even more impermanent than the object. The perception of the object is more impermanent than the object itself. So say we have a perception of ourselves. So maybe you know, maybe you perceive yourself as a man or as a woman, you know, or maybe as gender fluid, non-binary, or as a man of gay sexual orientation, or so on. So we have all these ways that we create a sense of ourself. Or maybe we see ourselves as old or young, or maybe we see ourselves as attractive or ugly. Maybe we have a sense of ourselves as unattractive. So all of these perceptions, all of these constructs around ourselves, their thoughts, their perceptions. And in that moment between one thought and another thought, when the mind becomes silent and that perception is not there, who are you? When the perception falls away, who are you? So it's not that perceptions and identities are wrong. I mean, we have them. Some of them maybe can be limiting. And so it's good to know if they're limiting, you know, especially negative perceptions that we hold to ourselves can be limiting. But to know the perception is not ultimately who you are, who I am, is important. And so when we see that perceptions arise and pass very quickly, it helps us not to cling to our perceptions. And so we begin to see that we perhaps whatever identity we have, identities can bring us into affinity with different, you know, perhaps people that we want to be in affinity with. But can we hold it loosely? Can we hold it lightly? You know. So what we're trying to understand is the nature of clinging. And so we cling to feelings. We cling to pleasant feelings. We resist unpleasant feelings. And we cling to perceptions. And perceptions are associated with certain kinds of feelings too. So it's a kind of a co-arising or a clustering of experiences. For the mind to have an experience of not grasping is a radical thing for the mind to do. It's a radical experience. It's not common, and it's transformative. So, as our minds, it sometimes this collecting of the mind and developing stability of attention is talked about as the mind becoming softer. The Buddha used that expression, that the mind becomes softer. It's less fixated, it's less rigid. And so, you know, we have more fluidity, more flexibility of being with life as it unfolds. And so we don't necessarily need to change our perceptions, we just need to change our relationship of perceptions. We don't need to change our feelings, we need to just change our relationship to them. Or that's, you know, what's being proposed here. To not to have the relationship of clinging to them, not to have a relationship of identifying with them, but just accepting them as part of the flow of life, of how life manifests within us, how life unfolds within us. So, I think that there were questions, yes?
So, I'm playing around with this a little bit. If I'm clinging to a perception, I'm wondering if that then becomes a belief, and then it's like the belief that becomes permanent.
Yeah, a perception maybe can be more like on a sensory level.
Yeah.
And we put some language to it, but a belief really becomes constructed in language. And yeah, people kill and die for their beliefs. You know, it's and are extremely threatened when their beliefs are challenged. When people identify so strongly with their beliefs, it can be very threatening.
Can a belief also be your relationship to the perception? Or is a relationship anything? Can that create a belief?
Your relationship to the perception?
Or to your feelings? Or to
can you give an example? Maybe. I'm just not...
So if I have a certain feeling, I have a... So I have a feeling about that. So I might be embarrassed or ashamed about feeling angry. And then I have a belief that I'm a bad person.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just wondering if the belief,
The belief,
the relationship to the
that makes sense. So, I mean, the belief can be can become quite fixed, and frozen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, we could sometimes that's also called a perception. The word perception can be used in that way too.
I'm loving this distinction between that a perception comes from what we're sensing in this moment, and then it's a little easier for me anyway to say, okay, I can see that as being impermanent.
Right.
Yeah.
And perceptions are conditioned. Perceptions are formed. So. Perceptions vary from person to person. Like, even colors, how we take in colors. Some people might, describe the color of the rug here as brown. And another person might say, well, it, has kind of purple overtones, So different, it's just light coming in different wavelengths into our eyes and how our eyes receive them and interpret those light waves and the word that we put on it, the word that we've been told is associated with that sensation. So it's, it varies with our physiology. Some people will see an item of clothing that somebody's wearing and they'll think it's beautiful. And another person will see an item of that same item of clothing and think it's, very unattractive, or make a judgment about it, So they're very, our perceptions are conditioned and they change.
If my mother told me when I was a kid, oh, when your stomach tightens, it's because of this, because you fear, maybe it's a perception that it's fear. In my mind, I think it's fear, but maybe it's more anger, but it was imposed by people telling me what I felt. Could that be something else that's conditioned? Even from the moment you start putting words on fear or
mm-hmm.
even that, we shouldn't even construct that around fear, anger, maybe for a different person the emotions are different.
Right. And that's important to kind of discover in meditation. We get in touch with these feelings, these emotions, and kind of, sometimes it's not just one thing. The word is helpful because sometimes the labeling of an emotion, if it's a contraction in you know, in the stomach, sometimes the labeling of an emotion can help us to attend to it rather than react to it. But sometimes it gets in the way. And so maybe we don't have to know whether it's fear or anger or both. You know, it's something that, our, you know, something happened and our stomach is knotted and we want to run away, or we're paralyzed, or we want to strike out, you know. So all of these reactions are, you know, sometimes, you know, come up with threats. And so, you know, labeling the reaction helps us talk about it, but it doesn't actually lead us to the ultimate truth of what it is.
So it just dawned on me, like, even that judgment or fear, I was thinking of fear, it's all just a question of perception. So if we can thin it down to the perception, I mean, not thin it, but how can I put it, you know, like, it stops being, you know, you know, there's a perception, and then you judge this, I judge that, or, you know, one fear is this, one. You know what I mean?
So there's no ultimate truth in any of it. It's
well,
just what the mind does.
It's just the perception, and then it brings all these
judgments, and we can just watch the mind go perception, judgment, and just let the mind do what it does. And we don't have to judge ourselves.
It's just perceptions.
Just perceptions, and we don't have to think, oh, I had, you know, judgments coming up, I'm a bad person. You know, I shouldn't have judgment. I have to get rid of judgment. I have to eradicate judgment. You know, well, when we don't buy, actually what happens when we don't buy the judgment, when it doesn't form a belief, right? And we don't harden it into a belief, like that judgment is right. But we just see it as a judgment of the mind coming from perception. And then, okay, there's a judgment. Now let me look again at what the mind was judging. Let me just look with fresh eyes at what the mind was judging and see it for what it is.
As a perception. Maybe.
Yeah, as a perception, but, you know, maybe I'll see some new things about it that when I just stayed with the perception, you know, with the naming of what it is, I didn't see. You know, so perception can limit our understanding when we so, for example, we look out the window and, you know, so what is it out there? It's a tree, right? Well, it's, you know, it's a tree, but, like, you know, what do we know about what a tree is? I mean, a tree is an amazing being. A tree is, you know, as much as we can see above, there's more below, and then I, Anais is a botanist, and she was telling me about how tree roots are connected to all the fungi, and fungi can go, like one fungi can extend for kilometers. So, and there's an interdependent relationship between, a symbiotic relationship between the tree and the fungi that help the tree to bring nutrients. Like, wow, you know, what's a tree? And how does the tree sense? Like, trees sense, you know, they're sensitive beings.
And they connect with the roots and to one another.
Yeah, they connect to one another too in forests, and they, you know, and they send messages to each other. Yeah, yeah. So, you know, maybe they say, oh, here comes some guy with a chainsaw.
Yeah.
they actually do.
Yeah.
Lovers talk to one another when it comes to the
predators.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's so much we don't know about trees. You know, we just see a tree and it's like a word, a tree, a thing. You know, it's so limited. So when we have, you know, like a perception, can we look more deeply? So maybe there's somebody in our place of work, or somebody who lives on our block or in an apartment nearby, you know, and okay, so that's, you know, that's Joe. Hi Joe, you know, how you doing? Good. You know, Joe dresses a certain way, and you know, and we have an idea of what Joe is, you know, who Joe is, but we don't know Joe. You know, we have a perception, a very limited perception of Joe. And Joe is a whole universe of experience and hopes and fears and loves
perception.
And of his perceptions. That's right. That's right. Yeah.
The discernment that we could have, because I guess this is how I experience it, is it's, yes, there's no absolute truth, and at the same time, there is a way when you're not that much in reaction where you can discern things more clearly, one from the others. This is what discernment is. Interconnect what you said.
I understand the word discernment, how it's used in practice, has to do with skillful and unskillful.
Okay.
A lot. Like, what's leading to suffering and what's leading to more, you know, happiness and connection and kindness. So, I think that's how it's usually used. But, yeah, I mean, it's maybe so distinguishing or... I'm not really sure
It was more this thing about just to not finish on, you know, there are so much perception as nothing real. It was maybe more an angle to say that when we are more able and skillful to not react, there is a way to see the reality a little bit more clearly, to discern a little bit more about, let's say, a conflict, a relationship, our feelings.
Yeah, yeah.
So yes, there. It's still something very subjective and not absolute, and at the same time, there is a way for development.
Right.
Just
right.
We don't want to go down the path of nihilism.
This isn't nihilism.
It's all just a perception. It's all just meaningless, you know, because it's all just a perception.
Yeah.
Work skillfully with discernment to know how to behave or how to react when a certain feeling comes up or a phenomenon arises.
Yeah, yeah. It's not that there is nothing, you know, it's that we don't know everything about what is. And there's always more to take in. I mean, there's always more to open to in the, you know, this amazing mystery of being. And of course, you know, even though our perceptions are limited, we function, you know, on a day-by-day basis, and we, you know, we interact with people as if we know them, you know, even though we don't know who they are in this moment, you know, but we interact with people that, you know, we recognize, and we greet them, and we have a basis of shared experiences and understandings and communication that we build on. But you know, we can be kept from assuming that we know, you know, who someone is. And, that expression that I used yesterday about the Chinese expression, that the Chinese Buddhist expression, that when we're not mindful, we're killing life. I think that's the sense of it. And when we are mindful, we're giving life to life. So we're engaging fully in life. I think you...
Well, I was just going to say that when you're talking about like the perception of an external behavior, maybe by somebody else, where to decrease the suffering that you're talking about, what about just asking for clarification on what somebody meant instead of, because perception turns into assumption when it comes to relationships.
Yeah, absolutely.
People, not with treatment with people.
Yeah.
There's a lot of suffering that can be like, what do you mean?
Absolutely.
Instead of like storming away with this person.
yeah, like, can, yeah, we really need to
just ask
and continue to inquire. It's part of mindful investigation, is to really try to understand deeply. You know, it's deep listening.
I have lots of things, but partly what keeps coming up in my mind is the idea of impermanence, right? That even our perceptions become rigid of people, and that's not the only thing they are, or the only, you know, that is part of it. But I also was struggling with the idea of decision making when, you know, we perceive something, and then we perceive, you know, or we have a feeling about making a decision, and then we have another feeling about that decision. You know, you go back and forth, and then how do you know which is the feeling that's right, you know, when you have to do something. And and I was thinking that possibly one of the feelings could be about clinging, you know, to something of loss, but the other decision, the other part of that decision is where you need to go somehow. But sometimes
it's sometimes really not clear, you know, and then a decision somehow gets made, you know. So is it that I make the decision, or does the decision kind of emerge, kind of through me? I find decisions kind of interesting, and I find that often, you know, when I'm sitting with something and there's not clarity about it, you know, a decision begins. If I'm not holding, you know, for or against, if I'm open, a decision often just comes through, you know. So, but we all, you know, we all have different ways. And but
I guess I'm just talking about that perception of like clarity when you, and then it keeps changing, that it can become very challenging.
Yeah. That's life, inherently unstable. Did you have something you wanted to say?
I just wanted to go back to beliefs and perceptions, because it seems to me that perceptions are influenced so much by the way we have been taught or conditioned, so that police officers in the United States see black people and have them in a certain way. They see them in a certain way. We live, and I'm just struggling with this idea of white privilege. That is something that influences the way we perceive the world. And so there is something already,
definitely,
in our minds that leads us to see through these things.
Yeah. So beliefs, you know, form perceptions. Beliefs that come from society. Beliefs that come from our upbringing, and then how we perceive is definitely shaped by those. Mm-hmm. And you know, and we think that that's how things are.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And until the perception shifts. One last thing.
Usually when the Buddha talks about it, it's the word is views instead of opinions, and like you should let go of views and you shouldn't grasp views. And I just love it because it's like a lens that you see everything through. So all your perceptions of your sensations are colored by your views, and so you have to let go of that and witness that in your meditation.
Yeah.
And
Okay, thank you very much.